VOA's Joe Ramsey with this worldwide news update. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians streamed into Gaza's most heavily damaged area on Monday after Israel opened the north for the first time since the early weeks of the war with Hamas. AP correspondent Joe Fetterman has more from Jerusalem.
This is the first time people have been able to return to their homes in over a year. So we are seeing very dramatic scenes of tens of thousands, perhaps hundreds of thousands of people streaming back on foot, walking along the coast toward their former homes in northern Gaza. We also see some movement of private vehicles moving through checkpoints that are manned by private American security firms. Now, this does not mean that the war is over. This is not an end to the war, but it is an end to the war as we have known it in these past few months. As part of this pullback, Israeli troops are now confined largely to a buffer zone along the border with Gaza. This is allowing the first free movement of Palestinian civilians in over a year.
AP correspondent Joe Fetterman. Thousands fled the city of Goma on Monday as fighting raged between Congolese forces and rebels backed by neighboring Rwanda, who claim to have captured Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo's largest regional hub. AP correspondent Haya Benjwani reports.
Fighting has escalated in recent days despite calls from the UN Security Council for the insurgents to withdraw. Gunshots rang across the city overnight before dozens of rebels in military uniform early in the morning marched into a city on the border with Rwanda. The UN Security Council called on M23 rebels to immediately reverse advances. Other countries, including the United States and France, have also condemned the rebel push. I'm Haya Panjwani.
This is VOA News. Survivors of the Nazi Holocaust on Monday marked the 80th anniversary of the liberation of the notorious Auschwitz concentration camp. Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman reports.
Those attending the commemoration included German Chancellor Olaf Scholz, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, Britain's King Charles, French President Emmanuel Macron, Polish President Andrzej Duda, and many other leaders. They did not make speeches, but rather listened, for perhaps the last time, to those who suffered and witnessed firsthand one of humanity's greatest atrocities. The survivors warned against a global rise in anti-Semitism and against intolerance. Retired physician Leo Weintraub is 99 years old.
It grieves me deeply to see in many European countries, but also in Poland, Nazi-style uniforms and slogans openly paraded at marches.
The ceremony was held at the site established in Poland by occupying German forces, first as a forced labor camp and then as a key part of the Nazi machinery devoted to exterminating European Jews. More than 1.1 million people, mostly Jews, perished here in gas chambers or from starvation, cold, and disease.
Reuters correspondent Zachary Goldman. U.S. public health officials have been told to immediately stop working with the World Health Organization. AP correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
A memo from a top CDC official tells senior agency leaders to immediately end any collaboration with the WHO. President Trump issued an order last week to start pulling the U.S. out of the WHO, but that requires congressional approval and 1 year's notice, among other things. Experts say the sudden stoppage in working with the WHO is a surprise and would hurt work on dealing with brewing health threats around the world. Sagar Magani, Washington.
The Trump Justice Department said Monday that it had fired more than a dozen employees who worked on criminal investigations into President Donald Trump. The actions target career prosecutors who worked on Special Counsel Jack Smith's team. It reflects the administration's determination to purge the government of workers it perceives as disloyal to the president. The move, which follows the reassignment of multiple senior career officials across divisions, was made even though rank-and-file prosecutors by tradition remain in their positions across presidential administrations and usually are not punished because of their involvement in sensitive investigations. That wraps up this update, but the world and news never stop. For additional updates, visit our website. VOANews.com. I'm Joe Ramsey. VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 28th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Experts consider solutions to the worrying humanitarian situation in Goma.
The emphasis should be accorded to talks for peace, negotiations for the peaceful settlement of this crisis, which is fundamentally a political crisis.
Some observers say the DRC government has not done enough to protect its citizens. Liberian President Boakai delivers his second State of the Nation address amid rising tensions in the country. A UN special envoy arrives in Zambia to assess freedom of expression. Zimbabwe's war veterans call on President Mnangagwa to step down. The African Union considers restructuring to satisfy calls for institutional reforms.
The continent is facing unprecedented challenges regarding peace and security. Conflict continues to rob Africa of its potential, costing the continent an estimated $18 billion annually and displacing millions.
And the draws for the 35th edition of the Africa Cup of Nations were held on Monday. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations on Monday warned of the extremely worrying humanitarian situation in the besieged Democratic Republic of Congo city of Goma. This as the UN seeks to protect civilians caught in the DRC army's clash with M23 rebels. The rebels announced on Sunday that they had taken control of the city. Meanwhile, Herbert Kabasu Katulondi, a former governor of the central Kasai province in the DRC, tells viewers Peter Clotty that genuine dialogue is the best way to resolve the ongoing conflict in the eastern part of the country.
The emphasis or priority should be accorded to talks for peace, negotiations for the peaceful settlement of this crisis, which is fundamentally a political crisis that caused, contrary to the perception of M23, like the former M23 of 2012, the M23 currently is only a sort of military wing of a broader a coalition called Alliance Fleuve Congo, IFC, led by Corneille Nangaa, who is the former president of the Congolese Independent Electoral Commission. And so M23 is only it's a military wing. So the key issue is political, the crisis of legitimacy. According to Alliance Fleuve Congo, there's a crisis of legitimacy. Why? Because they consider that election in 2023 were fraudulent. Even the Carter Center considers that these elections were not valid. And therefore, there should be talks. Emphasis should be on talks. However, I have some reservation about that because Minister Tshisekedi has been reiterating repeatedly his refusal or his absolute rejection of any talks with M23.
There are concerns that with the M23 taking over Goma, it will be easier for them, the rebels, to march on to Kinshasa. Is this fear legitimate?
The fear is legitimate, but for Alliance of Congo slash M23 going to Kinshasa, they consider that it is a legitimate action because they point out also the fact that they are basing their political and military operations on Article 64 of the Congolese Constitution, which prescribes that all Congolese have got the duty of standing and rejecting any individual or group of individuals who intend to impose dictatorship on the Congolese. So IFC, Alliance Fleuve Congo slash M23, they consider that the Kinshasa government is illegitimate and they should therefore prompt regime change.
But do you think the talks are the best way to resolve the security crisis that we are witnessing in the eastern part of Congo?
Yes, it is, because if Mr. Tshisekedi manifests or expresses, because as I'm saying, Mr. Tshisekedi must transcend his own, you know, understanding of the problem, because he says for reasons that are not rational that he will never ever talk to M23. Yet he was an associate. He collaborated with M23 before becoming president, when M23 had been defeated and disbanded under President Kabila. Prior to becoming ascending at the helm of the DRC state, Mr. Tshisekedi collaborated with M23. When he became president, he even invited M23 to Kinshasa, accommodated them for 14 months in luxurious hotels. Somehow, they didn't agree, and M23 went back to the bushes. So why would he refuse to talk to M23? Why would he refuse to talk to President Kagame?
Herbert Kabasu Katulondi is a former governor of the Central Kasai Province in the Democratic Republic of Congo. He spoke with viewer's Peter Clotty. After rebels took the Democratic Republic of Congo's eastern city of Goma, Kenyan President Sami Ruto said he plans to meet with Rwandan President Paul Kagame and the Congolese President Felix Tshisekedi on Wednesday. Mulengwa Zihindura is the president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies in the DRC and a former spokesperson for President Joseph Kabila. He tells VOA's Douglas Mpuga that the government in Kinshasa has not done enough to protect her territory.
Well, the biggest problem in Goma was the fact that the armed forces of the DRC were abandoned by their commander-in-chief. He had created or brought in the ingredients that made this possible. So the buck stops with President Felix Tshisekedi and his advisors on what happened to the city of Goma.
And how do you see this going forward? Do you think the rebels, and maybe will they stop there?
It's very difficult for me to say, but the one thing I can tell you is that President Felix Tshisekedi has created a context in Congo, especially with this idea of trying to change the constitution, where many people now feel like the only way to get rid of him is to fight. The only way to preserve the democracy that we've had since 2006 is to fight. And what you will see in coming days, a lot of politicians, a lot of the people that are being oppressed by President Tshisekedi will probably join Nanga's movement, the alliance that Nanga, this coalition of political and military groups that led by Nanga. So many of them will join that effectively because the context in Congo is very bad. Like right now, he found a very well-structured army, but he has imprisoned over 100 army officers in the Congo. Many of them are in prison and so on and so forth. And so you will see a big movement now, you know, trying to make sure that they are trying to topple him.
Are you keeping in contact with the people in Goma? What are you hearing from there? How are the civilians coping?
Well, it was very, very difficult at the beginning, you know, like 2 days or 3 days before the town fell was very difficult. But now I think what the people, because they have been abandoned by Kinshasa, so now they are into a situation of fait accompli, where, you know, let's just deal with this. And some of the people, you know, are just accepting the situation. That's what I can say, you know, because they had been abandoned by the government. The government was not taking care of the soldiers. The soldiers were at the front line not being able to fight, first because the government in Kinshasa was not allowing soldiers to fight. And they were telling them to observe the ceasefire that did not exist. And when the general, who was the military governor of North Kivu, told this to the media, rather, he was assassinated by the government in Kinshasa. So the people feel the arrival of the rebels would just end their misery. So they have just accepted whatever the situation looked.
Zihindura is the president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies in the DRC and a former spokesperson for President Joseph Kabila. He spoke with reporter Douglas Mpuga from Kinshasa. Africa is faced with complex geopolitical developments and economic challenges that are hindering its economic growth. In a meeting held in Nairobi yesterday, Monday, five heads of state, chaired by Kenyan President William Ruto, explore institutional reforms for the African Union. Experts, however, said such reforms must be led by heads of state and governments and not the AU Secretariat. Maureen Ojiambo reports.
In a meeting held at the State House Nairobi, the African Union addressed the reforms that involve reviving the structure, functioning and focus of the African Union Commission, AU organs and specialized agencies. President William Ruto, who chaired the meeting, said Africa is experiencing unprecedented economic turmoil. Ruto, who also spoke on security matters, said that last April and June, at least 1,000 terror incidences were reported in Africa, with more than 4,000 related deaths. He said that the continent's security apparatus must be strengthened to ensure the safety of its people.
The continent is facing unprecedented challenges regarding peace and security. Conflict continues to rob Africa of its potential, costing the continent an estimated $18 billion annually and displacing millions.
The meeting addressed innovative mechanism for the sustainable financing of the EU, reducing reliance on external donors and ensuring the union's financial independence. Ghanaian President John Dramani Mahama said over-reliance on external partners and funding compromises the organization's independence and ability to set its own agenda.
The EU must streamline its decision-making processes to ensure that they are timely and results-oriented. Bureaucratic inefficiencies undermine the confidence of our citizens and international partners, and overlapping mandates which hinder effective decision-making. By streamlining the EU commissions, clarifying roles, and eliminating redundancies, we can establish a more agile organization that is better equipped to address the evolving needs of our continent.
The members said AU must ensure the set agendas by the union focuses on critical areas, prioritize and streamline the union's agenda, and allocation of resources is key to member states. Tai Selassie is the president of Ethiopia.
Our union can stand on its feet only if we can meet the goals we set to cover 75% of our program budget and 25% of peace support mission. In this connection, we have to advance creative financing, including by encouraging private investment from our continent.
International relations, diplomacy and foreign relations expert Kizito Sabala says the EU reforms are long overdue.
The reform agenda is moving at a very slow pace, partly because it is being driven by the political elites on the continent. One of the major problems on the African continent is that regional integration is not driven by the citizens.
The two-day meeting brought together five selected heads of state and government from the continent. Among those present was also African Union Commission AUC Chairperson Musa Faki. For VOA Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January 28th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. A United Nations Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression is on a 10-day visit to Zambia to assess accusations that the government is stifling dissent. According to the UN, the Special Rapporteur will also focus on Zambia's legal and policy framework and the safety of journalists, activists, and human rights defenders in the country. Kathy Short reports from Lusaka.
Upon her arrival in Lusaka on Friday, Irene Khan, the UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression and Opinion, told journalists that her visit to Zambia will give her the chance to hear from all sides and make recommendations.
I can also discuss with you recent developments or legislative developments, other issues of how to strengthen your government's commitment to human rights, especially freedom of opinion and expression.
In May of last year, police in Zambia arrested two opposition lawmakers, two opposition party leaders, and an activist on espionage charges. This followed their accusation that the government played a role in the alleged abduction of an independent lawmaker, Emmanuel J.J. Banda. The government has denied that accusation. Meanwhile, Zambian journalist Thomas Ziambo has been arrested three times in 13 months after writing articles critical of the government. He is facing sedition charges. And last August, the government warned it would tighten cybersecurity laws to curb online hate speech, propaganda, and defamation. The ruling party later withdrew the bill after it was denounced by human rights groups. Zambia's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mulambo Haimbe, told VOA that his government has nothing to hide and invited the Special Rapporteur to Zambia. Haimbe defended his government's record on human rights, saying it has upheld rights guaranteed in the Zambian constitution.
We have Article 11, which protects the freedoms of individuals, protection of fundamental rights of individuals. In particular, with regard to the freedom of expression, Article 20 is clear that all citizens and persons within Zambia will enjoy an inalienable right to the freedom of expression and opinion.
Chishala Kateka, leader of the opposition New Heritage Party, told VOA that Khan's visit is very timely.
We are experiencing arbitrary arrests and transfer of individuals to distant provinces without due process. There's also a systematic denial of our right to assemble and express ourselves freely.
Julia Chibuta, a human rights activist, told VOA the visit of the UN Special Rapporteur is an opportunity to hear from both sides and offer solutions.
The Special Rapporteur will offer an independent scrutiny and provide unbiased analysis of the situation on the ground, as she is not affiliated to any institution in Zambia.
In August, UN experts expressed concern about the allegations of arbitrary arrest of political opponents in Zambia. The experts said the arrests and restrictions in Zambia have had a chilling effect on freedom of opinion, expression, association, and assembly, which are critical for a functioning democracy. Kathy Short, VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
Liberian President Joseph Boakai delivered his State of the Nation address on Monday evening, his second since taking office in 2024. As Denise Nipson reports, the speech took place against the backdrop of rising tensions in the country.
At the Capitol building where the president delivered his speech, the House of Representatives has two competing speakers. Also, of fire got at the joint chambers of the building in December, former President George Weah reportedly turned down a request to attend the occasion. He said it would signal his endorsement of what he called the illegal removal of the Speaker Kofa. In his speech, President Boakai recounted the progress of his administration in strengthening the economy, which he said was in decline when he took over.
Before our administration, growth slowed to just 4.6%. While some key agreements are still pending, I am pleased to report that we are actively negotiating with major multinational companies in energy, mining, agriculture, infrastructure, and technology. Once finalized, these negotiations are expected to bring over $3 billion in investment to our economy. We anticipate a promising medium-term outlook with expected growth rate of 5.8% in 2025.
President Boakai also addressed the recent fire at the national legislature and issued a warning to those who he said might be threatening the peace and security of the country.
I assure you that the security of the state and the sanctity of our, though may be assailed, may be threatened, however, it can never be broken. No one's personal ambition can ever outweigh the importance of our peace and security.
Some civil society members have expressed disappointment that the president did not mention rule of law in his address, regarding in particular the failure of some government officials to declare their assets. Anderson Mayman is the executive director for the Center for Transparency and Accountability in Liberia. He says the president's address offers hope, but his failure to emphasize the rule of law is a concern.
The president did not say much about whether or not he has acted on those other reports. And the reality is that he hasn't done much, if any, about those other reports. There are reports that have implicated some of the officials he has appointed.
Like Mayman, Eddie Jawolo, some Liberians lamented the absence of the full bench of the Supreme Court at this ceremony, while others say they are more concerned about bread and butter issues. For Dick Africa, I'm Denise Nipson in Monrovia, Liberia.
Zimbabwe's war veterans have called on President Emmerson Mnangagwa to step down after accusing him of nepotism, corruption, and failing to address the Maribor economy. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, where he talked to the ruling ZANU-PF party.
At a press conference streamed online, Blessed Runesu Geza, a veteran of Zimbabwe's 1960s and 1970s Liberation War and a member of Zimbabwe Central Committee, called President Emmerson Mnangagwa to step down immediately. He accused Mnangagwa of failing to live up to the promises he made in 2017 when he came to power with the army's help. He says, "We have so many people who died fighting for the liberation of this country. We have no decent graves, which is now being turned into a banana republic by the likes of Emerson while we are watching. People looting fans. The masses struggling while we are like spectators in a country we fought for. So we are saying, as war veterans, enough is enough. You have shown that you have failed. It can't get any worse. Corruption has become a security threat because these people are being protected by Emerson. So as war veterans, including masses, we are being asked, why did you give us this kind of a person? We no longer like him. So we are pleading with you, live peacefully. If you don't, people will use the constitution for you to go," said Geza. In an interview with VOA, ZANU-PF spokesman Farai Marapira dismissed the calls for Mnangagwa to step down.
The party position is clear. The party position is given through clear channels. So we cannot really dignify rogue rantings by responding to them. People speak their mind outside of the party. That's part of democracy, but the party position is clear. We had conference, and that is what we work with. Anything else is just ranting.
At a recent ZANU-PF conference, party leaders passed the resolution that Mnangagwa should seek a third term in 2028, assuming the party can force through amendments to the constitution. Party. Zimbabwe's constitution, adopted in 2013, allows parliament to impeach and remove the president if lawmakers feel he's incapacitated. Mnangagwa is one of Africa's oldest heads of state. In 2028, he'll be 86 years old. Columbus Mavungam, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
The draw for the 35th edition of the Africa Cup of Nations was held on Monday, January 27, in Rabat, Morocco. Here is Daybreak Africa Sports reporter Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria, with the details.
In Group A, host Morocco faced giant killers Comoros in the opening match of the 24-team tournament on December 21st, while title holders Ivory Coast will come up against five-time winners Cameroon. In Group B, South Africa will start their group campaign against Angola in Marrakesh on the 22nd of December and then meet top seeds Egypt, the most successful team in the history of the competition, winning seven AFCON titles in Agadir on the 26th of December and finish their group game against Zimbabwe in Marrakesh on the 29th of December. Nigeria were drawn alongside Tunisia, a North African team making a record 17th consecutive AFCON appearance, and two East African countries of Uganda and Tanzania in Group C. In Group D, Senegal, the 2021 AFCON champions, were drawn in the same group with last year's semi-finalist DR Congo, as well as Benin Republic and Botswana. Group F will see reigning champions Ivory Coast, who beat Nigeria 2-1 in the final last February, battle for the top spot with Cameroon, Gabon and Mozambique. Originally slated for mid-2025, the tournament had to be delayed to avoid clashing with the maiden edition of the revamped FIFA Club World Cup in the United States. The 2025 edition of the tournament will begin on December 21st, with the final taking place on the 18th of January 2026. For VOA Africa, I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Thank you, Samson. And that is it for this Tuesday, January 25th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your morning with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, saying thank you for listening.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all.